The earliest birds seem to have been carnivorous divers and water birds. To this day, some of the most primitive bird forms are found among the seabirds of the Arctic and Antarctic seas, and it's among these seabirds that zoologists still find lingering traces of teeth, which have otherwise vanished completely from the beak of the bird. The earliest known bird, the Archaeopteryx, had no beak. It had a row of teeth in a jaw like a reptile's. It had three claws at the forward corner of its wing. Its tail, too, was peculiar. All modern birds have their tail feathers set in a short, compact, bony rump. The Archaeopteryx had a long, bony tail with a row of feathers along each side. Fourth, this great period of Mesozoic life, this second volume of the Book of Life, is indeed an amazing story of reptilian life proliferating and developing. But the most striking thing of all the story remains to be told. Right up to the latest Mesozoic rocks, we find all these reptilian orders we've enumerated still flourishing unchallenged. There's no hint of an enemy or competitor to them in the relics we find of their world. Then the record is broken. We don't know how long a time the break represents. Many pages may be missing here, pages that may represent some great cataclysmal climactic change. When next we find abundant traces of the land plants and the land animals of the earth, this great multitude of reptile species had gone. For the most part, they've left no descendants. They've been wiped out. The pterodactyls have gone absolutely. Of the plesiosaurs and ichthyosaurs, none is alive. The mosasaurs have gone. Of the lizards, a few remain. The monitors of the Dutch East Indies are the largest. All the multitude and diversity of the dinosaurs have vanished. Only the crocodiles and the turtles and tortoises carry on in any quantity into Cainozoic times. The place of all these types in the picture that the Cainozoic fossils presently unfold to us is taken by other animals, not closely related to the Mesozoic reptiles, and certainly not descended from any of their ruling types. A new kind of life is in possession of the world. This apparently abrupt ending up of the reptiles is, beyond all question, the most striking revolution in the whole history of the earth before the coming of mankind. It's probably connected with the close of a vast period of equable, warm conditions and the onset of a new, austerer age in which the winters were bitterer and the summers brief but hot. The Mesozoic life, animal and vegetable alike, was adapted to warm conditions and capable of little resistance to cold. The new life, on the other hand, was before all things capable of resisting great changes of temperature. Whatever it was that led to the extinction of the Mesozoic reptiles, it was probably some very far-reaching change indeed, for the life of the seas did at the same time undergo a similar catastrophic alteration. The crescendo and ending of the reptiles on land was paralleled by the crescendo and ending of the ammonites, a division of creatures like squids with coiled shells which swarmed in those ancient seas. All through the rocky record of this Mesozoic period, there's a vast multitude and variety of these coiled shells. There are hundreds of species, and towards the end of the Mesozoic period, they increased in diversity and produced exaggerated types. When the record resumes, these too have gone. So far as the reptiles are concerned, people may perhaps be inclined to argue that they were exterminated because the mammals had replaced them, competed with them, and were more fitted to survive, but nothing of the sort can be true of the ammonites, because to this day their place has not been taken. Simply, they are gone. Unknown conditions made it possible for them to live in the Mesozoic seas, and then some unknown change made life impossible for them. No genus of ammonite survives today of all that vast variety, but there still exists one isolated genus very closely related to the ammonites, the pearly nautilus. It's found, it's to be noted, in the warm waters of the Indian and Pacific Oceans. As far as the mammals competing with and ousting the less fit reptiles, a struggle of which people talk at times, there isn't a scrap of evidence of any such direct competition. To judge by the record of the rocks as we know it today, there is much more reason for believing that first the reptiles in some inexplicable way perished, and then that later on, after a very hard time for all life upon the earth, the mammals, as conditions became more genial again, developed and spread to fill the vacant world. Fifth, were there mammals in the Mesozoic period? This is a question not yet to be answered precisely. Patiently and steadily the geologists gather fresh evidence and reason out completer conclusions. At any time, some new deposit may reveal fossils that will illuminate this question. Certainly either mammals or the ancestors of the mammals must have lived throughout the Mesozoic period. In the very opening chapter of the Mesozoic volume of the record, there were those theriomorphous reptiles to which we've already alluded, and in the later Mesozoic, a number of small jawbones are found, entirely mammalian in character. But there's not a scrap, not a bone, to suggest that there lived any Mesozoic mammal which could look a dinosaur in the face. The Mesozoic mammals, or mammal-like reptiles, for we don't know clearly which they were, seem to have been all obscure little beasts of the size of mice and rats, more like a downtrodden order of reptiles than a distinct class. Probably they still laid eggs and were developing only slowly their distinctive covering of hair. They lived away from big waters, and perhaps in the desolate uplands, as marmots do now. Probably they lived there beyond the pursuit of the carnivorous dinosaurs. Some perhaps went on all fours, some chiefly went on their hind legs and clambered with their forelimbs. They became fossils only so occasionally that chance hasn't yet revealed a single complete skeleton in the whole vast record of the Mesozoic rocks by which to check these guesses. These little theriomorphs, these ancestral mammals, developed hair. Hairs, like feathers, are long and elaborately specialized scales. Hair is perhaps the clue to the salvation of the early mammals. Leading lives upon the margin of existence, away from the marshes and the warmth, they developed an outer covering, only second in its warmth-holding or heat-resisting powers, to the down and feathers of the Arctic seabirds. And so they held out through the age of hardship between the Mesozoic and the Cainozoic ages, to which most of the true reptiles succumbed. All the main characteristics of this flora and sea and land fauna that came to an end with the end of the Mesozoic age were such as were adapted to an equable climate and to shallow and swampy regions. But in the case of their Cainozoic successors, both hair and feathers gave a power of resistance to variable temperatures such as no reptile possessed, and with it they gave a range far greater than any animal had hitherto attained. The range of life of the lower Paleozoic period was confined to warm water. The range of life of the upper Paleozoic period was confined to warm water or to warm swamps and wet ground. The range of life of the Mesozoic period, as we know it, was confined to water and fairly low-lying valley regions under equable conditions. Meanwhile, in each of these periods, there were types involuntarily extending the range of life beyond the limits prevailing in that period. And when ages of extreme conditions prevailed, it was these marginal types which survived to inherit the depopulated world. That, perhaps, is the most general statement we can make about the story of the geological record. It's a story of widening range. Classes, genera, and species of animals appear and disappear, but the range widens. It widens always. Life has never had so great a range as it has today. Life today, in the form of man, goes higher in the air than it has ever done before. Man's geographical range is from pole to pole. He goes under the water in submarines. He sounds the cold, lifeless darkness of the deepest seas. He burrows into virgin levels of the rocks, and in thought and knowledge he pierces to the centre of the earth and reaches out to the uttermost star. Yet in all the relics of the Mesozoic time we find no certain memorials of his ancestry. His ancestors, like the ancestors of all the kindred mammals, must have been creatures so rare, so obscure, and so remote that they've left scarcely a trace amidst the abundant vestiges of the monsters that wallowed rejoicing in the steamy air and lush vegetation of the Mesozoic lagoons, or crawled, or hopped, or fluttered over the great river plains of that time.